Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, episode 63, I think we're up to now. I seem to say this every single week. We've got loads of news to cover. We didn't do a show last week, and since then, TwitchCon EU has happened in Amsterdam. Neither Ben nor I went, but there's plenty of news that's come out now from that. So we'll be covering all the Twitch updates, but there's also updates from YouTube, updates from Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Discord, I think all the different platforms, as well as some streamer updates as well. So to get us through all of that, of course, I'm going to be joined, as I always am, by my wonderful co-host, Ben Green, over in the States. Ben, how are you? How is your week? Are you still suffering from heat, or have you gotten past that now?
Well, I'm still having some heat, but over here in the USP, we are actually somewhat equipped to deal with the heat. Like, it's warm, but I have AC. But if you guys don't know, the reason we canceled last week is because Pete over there was in ridiculous. I don't even, what was the temperature for you over there, Pete, last week? I heard it was record breaking.
Yeah, I mean, we're hitting like high 30s now over in the UK, which we're just not equipped to do. We don't have air conditioning in houses, or most people don't. I purchased a pretty good fan last year, which got me through most of the nights. But yeah, doing an evening podcast with like lights on and blind shut was a recipe to probably pass out on stream. And I don't think anybody wanted to see that. Or maybe they did. That's how you get one of the viral clips on live stream fails, probably. But yeah, it's cooled down now. I was in Budapest over the weekend for a wedding, and it was just as hot there. So we're just equaling the likes of Hungary now, our little island, which is meant to be, you know, always raining. Anyway, there's more exciting things to talk about than the weather, I believe, Ben. We'll usually ramp up to the big news towards the end. But since we were just listening to a bit of lo-fi in the countdown whilst waiting for the stream, why don't we start by talking about YouTube taking down probably the biggest, or certainly the longest running live stream in the music world anyway, on YouTube. Of course, talking about Lo-Fi Girl. We've got some screen share to bring up here. For those of you that don't know, Lo-Fi Girl is a constant running radio station on YouTube. So it's 24/7, just playing lo-fi music. So a lot of people use it to study or to work, or, you know, whatever you want to do. It's just nice, easy listening lo-fi music like we had in the intro. And it had been running for about 2.5 years without a single pause or break. So the live stream had been up for two plus years, and got some false copyright claims, which seems to be the downfall of YouTube, these pesky studios that are falsely claiming things. And it took down one of the biggest streams. And I think it was down for probably about 24 hours, maybe a little bit longer. I didn't actually check the two dates as to when it went back up again. It's now back up. And they always say no news is bad news. This was kind of the same. Like, it broke its records for how many people were watching it as soon as it came back, because I think so many people saw the news articles. But yeah, interesting one just to start off. What is YouTube going to do about this? They've already released a couple of updates to hopefully make the process of counterclaiming a little bit easier, Ben. But they need to stop these illegitimate copyright claims, don't they? And I imagine Twitch is probably going to have the same issue.
Yeah, even Lo-Fi Girl is not safe from DMCA, Pete. I mean, we talk about biggest streamers. That's probably the biggest streamer overall, actually. Ludwig and Valkyrie and everybody else is nobody, nothing on Lo-Fi Girl. But it's just kind of a funny story. I'm glad they got it back after 48 hours up. And I imagine that Lo-Fi Girl will be streaming until the end of time, unless YouTube goes down or something. But obviously, if an account like this can get flagged for it too, then there are issues still with the system. So I hope that they have seen this as an abuse case and have ways to deal with that going forward too.
Yeah, I mean, they need to make sure that things like that don't happen, because as more legitimate companies want to start live broadcasting on YouTube, they need to make sure they don't have any measures where, you know, if NFL or a sports broadcast started streaming on YouTube, which is probably their dream, they would have to have some measures in place to make sure that some rogue company can't just live take them down. So yeah, fingers crossed that the small guys, Lo-Fi Girls, can have the same level of protection. Also, in terms of pretty interesting updates, Discord has partnered with Xbox, or maybe not partnered with them, but they have integrated Discord voice directly into Xbox now, which is kind of strange, because wasn't the news like 6 months ago that PlayStation and Discord had reached an agreement to make sure that they weren't getting bought out by Microsoft, and now they've ended up prioritizing the Microsoft games console in Xbox. But yeah, just to briefly go over, this is exactly as it sounds. You can now use Discord from Xbox, or if you can't right now, you very shortly will be able to. So you just need to connect your two Xbox and Discord accounts, and you can even transfer calls from your phone or from your computer to the Xbox without losing connection, which is pretty cool. So, you know, if you have mates that play certain games on Xbox and certain games on PC, you can hopefully never drop from the call. And I think Xbox voice chat has been pretty bad from what I've heard. Again, neither of us are console streamers. But certainly Discord, integrating all of that and being able to game and chat with your friends no matter what platform you're on, I imagine that's a big plus for anyone that is a console gamer.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this personally because I play with a lot of friends who are on Xbox. And I use the Xbox voice pretty regularly because you can use that on PC with people on console. But it's not the best, and Discord has way more controls for audio quality and voice limits and things like that for thresholds. So I hope this comes out pretty soon. I think they said it's open to some insiders right now, which is like Xbox's exclusive program for the big fans. But I imagine it'll roll out slowly throughout the rest of this year. And to your point, Pete, they did announce some sort of integration with PlayStation, I think earlier this year, but no one really knows where that's at right now. So it seems like Xbox and PC are the only two right now that can speak, but maybe in the future, just like gaming with Fortnite and free-to-play stuff, we'll finally have a voice platform that's across all stuff. I mean, that'd be pretty cool, honestly, if you could do that across PC, PlayStation, and Xbox all on Discord in the future.
Yeah, I mean, eventually Discord is just going to be the common place for gaming communities or all kinds of communities to hang out, but being able to talk amongst your mates no matter what they're playing on, especially like you said, when games are kind of going in that direction. Certainly game publishers that have enough budget to be able to build the game for PC, Xbox and PlayStation. It's nice that you can link it up all with Discord now as well. And smart move from them, because you know they want to keep growing, and opening up their app to people that don't use a PC or a Mac is more people that can use Discord services. So yeah, definitely wanted to cover that. What else do we have in small little bits of news? Instagram deciding that now any video that you post will be a reel. So they're forcing reels down your throat whether you like it or not. This tweet basically shows the update that some people are seeing, where video posts are now shared as reels. I don't think previous videos count as reels, but anything new that you post will directly become a reel. And actually I got the Instagram update the other day that I'd seen a lot of people complaining about, where now if you're scrolling through the homepage, it just goes straight into the reels format, where it autos, like it locks in place to the next bit of content, and videos will play in vertical format. So it's all going this way. I mean, I can't say that they don't have the data behind it being successful. You know, look how successful TikTok's been. It's not really a surprise that people are pushing this, you know, auto scrolling or you know, never ending, and you don't even need to choose the content that you're going to watch. It just chooses it for you because the algorithm knows best. But certainly worth covering. There is also a blog post that Facebook or Meta put up, just going through exactly what this means in terms of new video posts being shared as reels. So if you want to read more into it, then we'll link that down in the show notes below the video or in the show notes in the podcast after we've finished editing. But yeah, Ben, we both use Instagram, I think, more so than TikTok, and we seem to be in the minority in that case. But yeah, it does seem like everything is trending towards that same direction, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's obviously TikTok that's making this change happen, and every platform is feeling this. We're going to talk about Facebook in a second, kind of doing the same thing. And I don't know if you've seen, Pete, even Netflix has their own TikTok type of thing now. So everybody's trying to get in on that format because TikTok's doing so well. I can't really blame Instagram for that. Although I will say it does kind of stink that Instagram is moving away from just photos, it seems like, to really focus on video. I think we talked about how on internally they were saying they're more of a video app now. They want to go that way versus photos. And so I personally am a little sad to see it move away from the photo app because nothing else really does that quite the same. But at the same time, I mean, from a business perspective, I get why they want to go into TikTok space, because there's just so much value there right now and so much attention.
That's why I kind of like how Twitter has just remained as the place where you put down 240 characters. I know things have changed over time and they've tried to push new features, but they haven't tried to be the same as TikTok or really introduce any of those features in a big way. And they're just happy being the place that people stay and do that one thing, which is sharing their thoughts through text. But speaking of TikTok, there's also been an update that we've seen on TikTok. This one is quite a cool one, where you can, very soon, they'll be starting to auto-caption your videos, but not only auto-caption them, also generate subtitles in various different languages. So it will translate the subtitles effectively into different languages. And the languages they put down here, or the initial batch of languages, is English, Portuguese, German, Indonesian, Italian, Korean, Mandarin, Spanish, and Turkish. So imagine creating, you know, your viral TikToks that you do then, and then having Mandarin subtitles generated for people that want to watch, you know, in countries that don't speak English. That is pretty cool. YouTube has done it for a while, I guess, with their sort of auto captions feature. Who knows how good it will be, but these things tend to get pretty good over time. You know, auto captions are pretty good now. I watch quite a lot of videos, you know, with captions on if it's late at night or something like that. And they're clearly just wanting to basically make all videos watchable, no matter which region you're watching from or which region the creator created it in and which languages they speak. Those captions will be auto-generated. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
This is super exciting. So I just saw this today, but I think we kind of talked about, I kind of feel like this is sort of the next frontier for content creation. Even we talked about how MrBeast is doing different channels in different languages now on YouTube. And he's sort of like pioneering that, I think, for YouTube at least. But having this built into TikTok is super interesting. Now, to your point, it may not be the best translating right off the bat, but that stuff's only going to get better over time as tech gets better at doing this. So, of course, it makes sense on TikTok, but I would love to see something like this on YouTube and Twitch and things like that. Like, if you think about, we talk about how big the Spanish streamer community is on Twitch and how it's rising so much. If you could have this feature and suddenly just market yourself to that entire side of Twitch that you can't really access right now. Same thing for other platforms too. That's a huge growth in audience potential. So I don't think you'll ever quite appeal to that audience quite the same if you can't speak it, of course, but translating with captions is a huge step to that. And I know, to your point, I've watched a lot of videos that are not in English that have decent captions, or even just some videos that kind of transcend language. So this is just one more step in that direction, I think. So I'm pretty excited.
So a lot of the advice that I've given and other creators have given, if you're creating some vertical video formats, is to hard burn in English captions so that people that are watching on mute still get teased into the first 5 seconds or so and can maybe watch your whole video without having to listen to audio. Like I said, many people watch, you know, where they can't listen. Maybe it's too noisy, or maybe they need to be silent completely. What's the advice now, do you think, if this is a feature that you've seen TikTok blog about that's going to come out, where they're going to be generating captions somewhere on screen anyway, and then translating those? Do you still whack those big, large text English captions up there, or do you stop doing that because this is features around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, it depends obviously how good it is, right? If the captioning is not very accurate, then it may do more harm than good. But I'm inclined to say that you probably want to go with what the built-in feature is, especially if the viewer can control turning them off and on or changing the language, things like that. I think that's the better experience at the end of the day. So that's what I would do.
I think what I would do is I'd read through this blog post and I'd find the little screenshots that they have and see exactly where they're putting the captions, and maybe just continue writing big captions for now and just making sure that either it does or it doesn't overlap, whichever way you want to go. But make sure that the captions, when they do get added, are visible, and then you don't have to re-record all your content. But TikTok content, you know, it's so short and quick and easy to make, they say anyway, that maybe you just make it again when the TikTok captions come out. Okay, from TikTok to Elgato. Sorry, Ben, I'm introducing all the topics here. Feel free to jump in whenever you want. But Elgato, this is an exciting one because Elgato and NVIDIA have joined forces or partnered up on a feature. And if you've been following the Gaming Careers YouTube channel for a while, you'll know that I have tested various different versions of NVIDIA Broadcast. Before that, I think it was called NVIDIA Voice something or other. I can't even remember the names, but it's gone through various different names. It's essentially NVIDIA's suite of tools where they use some specific cores on the newer graphics cards to do some pretty clever stuff with AI. So the two features that Elgato have now introduced into their software, which you can use without Elgato software if you just download the NVIDIA SDK or NVIDIA Broadcast app, one of which is AI noise removal, which is really good, like better than the things that are in OBS. You can see some crazy examples online. I think in my video, I had my partner blow-drying her hair in the background, turned it on, I continued speaking, and honestly, you can't tell that the hairdryer's on. It's really, really clever. They've introduced that into Wavelink, which is Elgato's Wave controlling audio software. And then the camera side, they've introduced into Camera Hub the background blur and background replacement, which they did. So if you had a webcam or a camera and you don't want to show off your background, it can use AI to kind of work out where your head and face are, and then blur out the rest of the background or use a completely different background if you wish to. So these tools haven't actually gotten any better, and maybe they get better over time, but it's not like Elgato has introduced them in a way that is really different to how they've been introduced in NVIDIA Broadcast, but they're incredibly useful, and there are a couple of nice little extras that you get when you're using them Elgato side. So one of which is, if you're using the noise removal, obviously Wavelink allows you to apply VST to any different channel, so not only your microphone but any other channel that you use in Wavelink. So if you wanted to use the noise removal on your teammates in Discord, if they don't have a great audio setup or they have a barking dog in the background or something like that, then you can add the noise removal VST to the voice chat channel in Wavelink. And similarly in Camera Hub, which allows you to control any camera that uses some kind of Elgato hardware, so either the Elgato camera itself or one of their capture cards, or one of their newer capture cards, certainly you get that control of background blur, background replacement, adding a green screen, all those kind of things. So I think really nice partnership, made a lot of sense. NVIDIA have been really happy to sort of partner up with anyone that wants to integrate their SDK, and it's really simple to set up now. What do you think, Ben? I've rambled on for a while there, but it's pretty impressive stuff, and I wanted to make sure I covered all the little nuances.
Yeah, it's super cool. I think especially the VST plugin for noise removal. I've seen the videos that you've talked about. I know I saw yours, but then there was also the really famous one where somebody was like banging on a drum and shaking something and you couldn't hear it at all. I've not tested this myself, but just from seeing those examples, I mean, it's pretty clear it's great, especially if you have some sort of constant background noise, like I have a fan right now or a dog or kids, stuff like that, that's going to get in the way of your mic. Super helpful for that. So it's nice that it's built in. I think there's also one more thing for this, Pete. Didn't they, I believe the HD60X is G-Sync certified now. That was kind of also hidden in this announcement from NVIDIA, which apparently was pretty hard to make happen from what I saw. I guess they have pretty rigorous testing to get that certification. So definitely props to Elgato for that, because G-Sync is huge. If you've never had that experience before or had an issue where you can't really get that consistent frame rate, G-Sync makes a huge difference. So very cool to see if you use that capture card.
Yeah, it was actually one of my main complaints in my review of the HD60X was that it supported FreeSync, and there was another technology that like HDMI something a version of sync, but it did support G-Sync, and I had like the perfect monitor to not be able to test this this device very well, because it was like G-Sync, it was a higher resolution and a higher frame rate than the max that the HD60X supported. So yeah, that's huge. I didn't actually even know they were going for this. Usually when you make a video review and you say something negative, or like I always try and find some kind of flaws, I was saying that I wish it supported G-Sync, they would get back to you being like, we are working on that. That was the common thing with the VST support in Wavelink. So many creators were like, yeah, it needs to add VSTs, and they were like, yep, we're aware, we're working on it, we've got to make it happen. This apparently was just a really lengthy testing and approval process to be able to say that it's NVIDIA G-Sync supported. So didn't even cross my mind that these two things were linked because of NVIDIA. Maybe there's like some partnership that needed to happen to make sure that NVIDIA G-Sync was supported, or some special firmware that has been helped develop by NVIDIA. I don't know, but this really does cement this as the best external capture card now. I don't think anything matches it. The fact that you're not going to get any screen tearing, either for yourself or for your stream, running at these high frame rates or high resolutions or even HDR and all those kind of things. It's a great capture card, and exciting to see where they keep pushing things. So that is Elgato's partnership with NVIDIA. I think we can move on to the big platforms. And with the big platforms, we always start with the smallest, which is Facebook. Facebook updates. We've talked about this update, I feel like, 4 or 5 times, but it's the first time that it's not just written in text. We've actually got an image or even sort of a GIF video as to how it's going to work. For the audio listeners, we are talking about the Clips to Reels feature. So being able to turn your YouTube gaming clips from your live stream directly into Reels for Facebook or for Instagram, just in the browser without any need of any additional software. And going through the screenshots and this little video, which I hope doesn't have any sound, it seems exactly like a lot of the services that we've been seeing online, doesn't it, Ben? There's services where you sort of position where your webcam is and where your gameplay is in the frame, and it spits out a preview as to what the vertical video format will look like. And it doesn't look super customizable right now. I would say the plenty of different online apps that we've seen probably offer a bit more customizability, but this is going to be free. This is going to be available, you know, completely to Facebook gaming streamers, and it's probably going to get a lot better over time. So nice to actually be able to see what the feature looks like for once after we've talked about it for a couple of months.
Yeah, finally we can kind of show what it looks like. And I want to clarify that they said it's open now. I guess it was a limited beta originally, but now it's open to all partners and level up creators, which I always forget what that means. I think it's affiliate kind of level on Facebook, but it should be available to you now. And what's really cool is it's built right into the platform, because I've used StreamLadder pretty frequently and other similar things, like you said, Pete. This looks just like StreamLadder, I think, with the way you select your webcam and then also your gameplay area, but then you push it straight out to Facebook. The one thing I couldn't confirm is I don't see anything in this post about, oh, it does say Instagram actually. So yeah, I guess you can confirm now it's on both Instagram and Facebook with Reels, which is big, especially because we just talked about how Instagram's really focusing on Reels. So if you can take your Facebook stream and just instantly push that out as a clip onto Instagram Reels, that's pretty nice. And I think that's probably, like, in my opinion, this is one of the big features that Facebook has over YouTube and Twitch, because we don't really have that same kind of experience in those. I think maybe you could do it on YouTube with some workarounds, but nothing like this at all is on Twitch. And it's huge just for discoverability, which is one of the big issues on both those platforms, really.
I mean, how Twitch haven't built into their app some way of sharing clips, like, and browsing clips still to this day amazes me. And if they are building that, it's definitely going to be vertical. So they'll be building a tool like this as well. YouTube, I think, almost definitely are going to be building this tool. I think they've even mentioned, maybe it was in Fuzz's end of year when he was talking about what was coming in 2022. I'm sure he said that there was going to be some direct ways of turning clips into shorts, YouTube Shorts, which is their version of Reels. They've all got different names. We'll get there eventually. I need to get it tattooed or posted up here, all the names. But yeah, I think it is the first like really unique feature, and keen to see people use it. As we said, looks really basic. You have to kind of use a square or rectangular webcam. There's no, you know, option to circle webcam, or if you use a really strange webcam mask or anything like that. And some of the more advanced tools allow you to like blur the backgrounds if you want to crop in your footage a little bit. And you know, maybe we'll see the ability to add music and all those kind of things come in the future. I'd be surprised if that's not going to be the way. But it's nice that we're getting to the point now where a lot of gaming creators and streamers won't need to necessarily own software like Premiere Pro or really advanced video editing software, as these browser-based video editors become better and more specific for the creators that are using them. I think that's it for Facebook, unless I'm mistaken, Ben. We can move on to some YouTube news. And the main starting point for that is that the head of gaming, not Fwiz, but the person that took over from Fwiz, Lester, at Chen on Twitter, is also leaving. I know time does fly, especially when we're doing one of these podcasts every week. But how recently did Fwiz leave? I feel like that was this year. Was it last year?
It was January this year. I checked it. So it's only been 6 months since Chen took over, and now he's gone as well, which is not great for the platform. Now it's weird because YouTube's been kind of exploding this year, right? And both Fwiz and Chen were like outspoken about the new features, and now it's pushed them to make them happen. But then they left pretty frequently, pretty quickly after those happened. So I'm not sure exactly why that is the case. I know they both announced new jobs like the day after they left YouTube. So they definitely had good offers coming in from other places. But it's really interesting that that position is having so much fluctuation. I couldn't find anything about who's replacing Chen as the next head of gaming in the order there. But it'll be interesting to see who comes in there next, because that role has historically been kind of like the face of YouTube gaming next to Susan. So I hope that whoever comes there next does the same thing that Fwiz and Chen did, and hopefully stays a little bit longer, because it sucks to kind of build that relationship with that person as the face, and then they leave very quickly after they do that, because then you can't really maintain that connection with someone for that long. So I don't know, Pete, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out that Shen or Chen, I apologize, Lester, let's I can pronounce that, has been there for a while. So he worked with Ryan in the YouTube gaming team for a while before taking the reins. So it's not like he joined in January and now has left, you know, 6 or 7 months later. But he certainly has left that role relatively quickly. And it'd be interesting to see who takes over. I really hope that it's not, these two things aren't connected and it's not a really bad job or getting loads of pressure from the C-level executives. And actually it's a fun job and we're going to see somebody great do it and continue to really invest in the platform. But yeah, we do want to cover it just because, it's sad. He in his 6 months, he definitely announced a lot of features, was active on Twitter, all those kind of things that we like to see from somebody, where we can hear about all the new features and genuinely interact with them. But yeah, sad. And we'll have to find out who's coming next. There's also been some YouTube updates in the back end. So let's bring up the screen share here. This is a screenshot from the Creator Insider YouTube channel. They kind of release a video every single week talking about what they're being working on. And this looks, Ben, like a way to increase the strictness on inappropriate comments on videos, which has been a problem for at least the last couple of years, as well as the impersonation type thing. So was this a video from Creator Insider that you managed to grab this from?
Yeah, there are three, I think, new videos from Creator Insider since our last podcast. And this one was focused on ways to combat spam and impersonation. So this one had three things. The first one was what you see here, which is a new option to increase the strictness of your auto mod. So hopefully it would catch things like spam and you know, phishing links and things like that more in the comments. I haven't tested this personally, but it should be available now from what I've seen. The second change they made was that, and this is interesting, they're removing the ability to hide your sub count for your channel, which I know that some channels had done before. So this is rolling out by the end of July, what they said. Every channel will have their sub count displayed when you're commenting and on your page, which they said they know some users don't want to show their sub counts for some reasons, but it does help verify when someone's trying to impersonate a big creator. So that I kind of understand that personally. The last thing they did, this is kind of whatever, but they're changing some of the characters you can use in your username in terms of text. So those fancy characters with weird strike throughs and foreign language or just strange, like non-usual characters are being blocked from usernames. So those three things are what they're hoping will change things. I think the biggest of those probably is the subcount one, actually, if you know what you're looking for, because then if you see Elon Musk commenting in your YouTube video, but he's got 3 subscribers, it's probably not Elon Musk. But yeah, we'll see how this rolls out. I think we'll still have a lot of issues personally, but it's good to see they're taking steps, Pete.
Yeah, this has been one of those things that their solutions, I'm kind of surprised that it's taken them so long to get there, because their solutions are kind of turning off a feature, which was being able to hide your sub count, which some of YouTubers did use. I know particularly starting out, some people can feel a bit embarrassed trying so hard with content and you know, having 11 subscribers. I certainly didn't tell any of my friends about gaming careers until it gained a bit of traction, because it was quite clear that I was trying quite hard. But they're removing that. So that's an easy feature for them to implement, because it's literally taking a feature away. And the other one is removing special characters. So both of these are key to reducing that impersonation spam that we see on channels. I actually finally got some on my channel. I was like, this is validating. I'm still relevant. You know, people want to impersonate me and pretend that they're doing giveaways. But yeah, they're both necessary, but they're both kind of, I would have thought, easy fixes that they could have done 6 months ago, a year ago, when this really started cropping up. And much larger YouTubers like MKBHD, Linus Tech Tips, they've been struggling with this for ages. People legitimately getting scammed because they think that they've won a giveaway or something like that. We also had a comment from Samir saying, let's bring it up on screen. I've been testing the increased strictness on my channel, and it has been doing a better but not perfect job. And I think that's probably what I would expect. It's going to improve things. It's probably not going to solve things, but they're aware of it. They're working on it. And half of the battle is just knowing that the platform that we use is aware of the problem and actually taking steps to try and fix it. So yeah, good changes on my end. Some people will be sad about having to show their sub count, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Just keep making content and your sub count should grow along with it. We've got more from YouTube though. Susan also, and I think this was a creator inside a video, has tweeted out about the new Shopify integration. So for those of you that don't know what Shopify is, it's a way of being able to make a website and sell things online. Is probably the easiest way of being able to describe it. Quite commonly, people use it to sell clothing, but literally, if you went on Shopify and looked at their list of clients, it's absolutely massive, the number of people that use their platform. Really, some really, really big companies use Shopify just because of how easy it is to set up a good-looking website and then connect all the things in the back end that need to happen when an order gets placed. The people start making the product if it's custom or bespoke, all of that stuff. But on the YouTube side, why they've partnered is to be able to, we've got the blog post here as well, directly link products that you're selling or talking about in the YouTube video. So they've got a couple of screenshots here of watching a YouTube video from the app of some makeup products and how exactly that would look. Basically, it's going to make affiliate links, I think, super powered as long as they're on Shopify in some way. Maybe it's going to make it much more likely that people purchase products that are talked about in videos. It's certainly going to make it much easier for the end user to be able to find and browse products, but it's just on Shopify, so it's not like they're partnering with Amazon, and we're probably not going to see YouTube and Amazon make too many connections. But what are your thoughts on this, Ben? I don't sell any merch or anything like that in the description below my videos, but sometimes I do, you know, talk about new products that have come out. I don't think any of them are being sold through Shopify, but maybe they will in the future.
Yeah, this one's super interesting. I feel like it has a lot of potential for what creators could do to sell merch, but also stuff beyond that. Because to your point, Shopify covers a lot of different stuff in terms of what you can sell. I think it's also kind of a move for brands. So if brands want to come on YouTube and you know, make videos, but also sell their stuff, they can do it more easily now. But it's really interesting for the creator, especially. I feel like this is something that we'll see people slowly adopt. And I imagine there'll be some really great videos out there from people on how to take advantage of this if you are a creator. It's also interesting because I believe that didn't YouTube have some sort of pushback on like Patreon stuff before, Pete, for ways to give money to the creator? And so like maybe this is their way of doing it instead of if you want to do merch, like this is the avenue they want you to do it through. I just thought that was really interesting, and we'll see kind of what people do with it, but it's pretty cool to see them push this through.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, basically. If you're a YouTuber that's starting to build a product, whatever that product is, it's going to make sense to do that through Shopify because it's going to make the integration so much better. So if you're selling, you know, your own brand of makeup or a note-taking journal or whatever it is, if you're building a website to sell that product, it makes sense to do it through Shopify just purely because of this YouTube integration that's coming in the future. That's the main thing I see. It still remains to be seen as to whether, you know, if it's not your product or anything to do with you, but you're still recommending it, if and what kind of affiliate income you might get for recommending people click through and buy that product. So all that's probably going to come in the future, but certainly one worth keeping an eye on because, like we said, Shopify's huge. So many websites use it. You wouldn't know because of the number of different custom styles that you can do. But the platform itself is absolutely massive. And I think, is that it for YouTube? We've got, one more creator inside a video. So I'll just bring up the channel here to show. But there is a video specifically, the latest video, talking about how they are adding bold, italic, and strike through into video descriptions. So you're going to be able to use bold text, italic text, and strike through text in your YouTube video descriptions, which is pretty interesting. It actually made me think, am I going to go through all of my YouTube videos? Like the ones, certainly the ones that are doing well still today and bold certain bits of text. You know, I have a lot of titles, like headers, on each section where I might have, you know, links to the podcast, for example? Am I going to bold them? Am I going to put them in italics so they stand out easier? I'm going to wait until a bigger YouTuber does it, and then I'm just going to copy their layout like like I usually do. But yeah, pretty interesting. That's, again, like, I don't think the description has changed massively, probably since they allowed you to add 3 hashtag tags that show just directly below the video. So it's been a long time since we've seen a change to it. So it seems strange that they're bringing it in now, but they're still working on descriptions. I thought that was the kind of thing that might go away, kind of like tags have gone away as well. But they're still encouraging people to use descriptions to stuff links and all kinds of notes. And we've seen in previous weeks they are adding the corrections feature in the descriptions, where you could sort of correct little bits of your YouTube videos. So yeah, it's still relevant. What do you think? Is it going to be abused? Bold text everywhere now? Special characters are going to appear in the description rather than the commenters' usernames.
I'm just going to bold italic my entire description so people see it. All caps, you know, YouTube style. Now, this is kind of cool. I think personally, this is the one that seems the smallest of all the YouTube updates. It's just a small thing for descriptions, but it's kind of interesting to hear that you're pretty excited about it. I think to your point, it does have some nice features. If you want to, like somebody in chat, I think said you could make the headers stand out a bit more, which is true. If you want to format your descriptions a bit more, that's kind of nice and just have some more options. I feel like there was maybe ways to get around this sort of in the past. Like, people used emojis a lot in descriptions for categories and things like that. But if it's built in, you don't have to go kind of hack your way into a nice looking format, then pretty nice. I'll definitely use it going forward too.
Right, should we move on to some Twitch stuff then? There's quite a few updates. Obviously, we said we had Twitch gone, so there's some things discussed there, but even some things that have come out right as we were planning this podcast that we want to cover. Nothing huge, but some certainly good updates, I think, all round. Let's start with a nice and small one that literally came out as we were getting ready to start the podcast. Pinned channels looks like it's going to be a thing. Our friend Zach, who's always first to get all the Twitch news, has found or taken a screenshot himself of the ability to be able to add... this isn't a very good screenshot, actually, for this. See if I can zoom out. I can't really. Anyway, up here in the top left, where you can sort of see half in the screenshot for the people that are watching, there's the ability to add 3 different channels to your pinned channels. So rather than just seeing a long list of recommended channels or channels that you follow, you're going to be able to pin your favorites to the top so you can see if they're live or not live, rather than having to go down via viewership. Don't know if there's really loads to say here, Ben. What's your thoughts? The ability to pin things is going to come up again. So it's clearly something that Twitch have researched and thought that is useful. But pin channels on your homepage or on any page you're browsing, actually, since that left-hand column is always there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think this is super nice. And to your point, it just got announced, but you can essentially just have 3 channels that you want to keep tabs on at the top of your list on the left side sidebar. So it's pretty cool, especially if you kind of stick around a couple channels, or maybe there's, you know, a streamer or two that you will always go watch if they're live in your priority order. And to your point, Pete, it's not sorted by viewership. So you can have those people prioritized there. So I'll definitely use this when it comes out. I think Zach said it's rolled out to about 20% of users. I'm not sure where he got that number. I didn't see it on the accounts I've used for Twitch. I don't think you had it either. But if anybody here in chat has access, I'd love to hear if you do, because it seems pretty interesting.
Even better than that, Ben, if anybody has access, so everyone go and check your Twitch pages now, see if you have access. Go and pin Benjamin Green. What's right. Your Twitch channel? Is there an underscore in there? Have you got
no the underscore?
He's got the actual one. Okay, so at Benjamin Green, go and pin it, screenshot it, tweet it, and tag us both on Twitter or add it to your Instagram story and tag us so that we see it, and then we'll reshare it to show that, you know, you're following
proof
and you're pinning the greatest creator on Twitch. Yeah, pretty cool update. There's also the big update I think most people were talking about before we went live, sort of in our 10-minute countdown, that people were pretty excited about, was the lower payout minimum. So previously, what you had to do to be able to earn a payout on Twitch is gather up over $100 of legible funds. So it rolls over month by month. So it's not like you need to make $100 in 1 month. If you made $99 in 1 month, you wouldn't get paid out. But as soon as you made $1 at the end of the next month, you would get paid out that $100. And they've halved it. They've lowered it down from $100 to $50. This isn't for all the different payout options. So let's just clarify that really quickly. I've got it down in here in my notes rather than in the blog. But the payout options that the new $50 limit applies to is ACH, e-check, PayPal, and check, but not wire transfer. And that is because wire transfer, there are fees involved that Twitch have to pay. And obviously the fees don't make sense for them at $50. So that will remain at $100. And this is starting July the 15th. So that has already started 10 days ago. And it's available in Argentina, Italy, Japan, Mexico, Spain, and Taiwan. So quite an interesting list of countries to start. We're used to seeing North America, Canada, UK being early on in the lists. But that should be coming around pretty soon. They're obviously rolling out slowly to make sure that it works. But lots of people really excited about this, and rightly so. Being, you know, if you're a creator that, let's say, makes $55 every single month through subs and bits and things like that, being able to get paid consistently every single month now, rather than having to get nothing for a month and then 100 for a month, is a big difference. It can make a difference to, you know, even you paying your internet bill, which is what everybody spends all their money on as a Twitch creator anyway. So yeah, really nice. I don't think anybody can have a negative about this, maybe apart from their country hasn't been included on the rollout. The last thing to mention, I guess, is that it's available to both partners and affiliates. So it's not just something that's going partner first. But Ben, are you excited about this one?
Yeah, this is really good. And honestly, there's not really a downside to this. If you're a creator, it just means you get money faster, hopefully. Based on our chat here in the stream, it seems like this is the thing people are most excited about. I think I saw somebody said they had like $99 last month and couldn't quite get the payout. So they have to wait a full another month for the next payout. So in this situation, you would get your money a lot faster. One really interesting note about this, at the TwitchCon EU keynote, during the intro, why am I blanking on the CEO's name, Pete? Help me out here.
Emmett
gave the keynote for TwitchCon EU. And he said with this that they want to get it to be even faster. He said potentially to be like within the next day or the same day that you're streaming to get that in your bank account. So that seems super aspirational to me, but it's kind of cool to hear them say that. And of course, we'll have to see them back it up with when that happens. But theoretically, we'll see more changes to this in the future where it would be like $25 or maybe the turnaround time would be half a month or a week or something instead of being as long as it is. So that's really big if you are a streamer and trying to go full time or trying to get some of your revenue from streams. I think this can be a really big thing in the future, but great start to it for sure.
Exactly. Honestly, Twitch has been knocking it out of the park recently. I think they've been rolling out some really, really good features, and it's good to see things like this that they probably don't help Twitch make any more profit. They probably, if anything, cost them a little bit of money, but they're rolling it out because it's good for creators. So big thumbs up for that. Do you want to introduce one? Why don't you introduce the Twitch Twitch charity? We half discussed this, didn't we? Maybe in the last pod because it had been leaked, but now actually an actual blog post from Twitch. So we've got some more details to share.
Yeah, I think so. People are excited about the payment stuff, which I get, but I think this is the one that I'm most excited for personally. So to your point, we talked about the Twitch charity stuff last episode. There were some leaks, but now it's been officially announced in a beta, which is Twitch's way of integrating charity directly into the platform. So you'll hopefully no longer need to go to a Tiltify or PayPal, please don't do that, or other sources for charity donations. You can just bake it right into your stream. And the blog post has some cool examples and screenshots of how it works. So to my understanding, you can sort of enable charity mode for your channel to start with if you have access to this. And that will essentially change your channel a little bit to be in this mode where your sub button gets replaced by a donate button for the actual cause that you want to support. And there's a tracker at the top of your chat that will show you progress to your goal. And any donations that come in from viewers will show in the chat. And Pete, there may not be screenshots. Oh, there is one here at the bottom, I think, that white screenshot, just to show this. But that's just some reference for how the system works. In terms of what charities you can support, I believe they're launching with about 200 charities you can choose to support with the launch of it. And they're going to be adding more as they go from what they say. But it's super interesting. And it is a very closed beta right now. I think they said that they randomly selected some people in the US for this first beta. So I don't think I have access to it just yet. But what's really cool is that it's a complete, every donation goes completely to the charity. Twitch isn't taking any of it. So that was one concern that we had originally that we can confirm, which is super cool. And it just makes it really easy for you as a streamer to support a cause without having to set up a whole nother page or figure out what to do with your bits and subs, and Twitch is taking half of that. And so I'm really excited for this personally, because it just makes it way easier to support causes with your stream, especially if that's all you want to do. I know some creators who don't even want the money themselves. They just want to put it all towards charity. So you could just keep your channel in that mode all the time if you wanted to. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about this, Pete. What's your first thoughts looking through this?
I really like what they've done, if I'm being honest. I think in the last pod, I said that I thought this was cool. Like, there was already good services that allowed you to help raise money for charity, but this sort of added the next level to it, didn't it? Because it was going to be directly integrated into the Twitch platform. There was going to be, you know, your donation would be pinned in Twitch chat. You're going to be able to integrate with the service providers, Stream Elements and Streamlabs, to be able to have an overlay, you know, as the donation came through. If that's not already live, then I'm sure it will be very soon. They're very quick to add those API endpoints, so that they can track things like that. And we've already seen how they've done things like hype trains and all those kind of features to encourage users to get involved. So if that's going to be going to charity and they're going to be able to enable all those kind of features, At first, I was a bit surprised that they were like replacing the sub button with it, but now that makes a lot more sense, because when you're fundraising, really you're wanting to be fully fundraising for a charity. So if there was like a donate button, but then people were starting to subscribe to you, that would feel a bit weird. Like, do I now need to manually pay that subscription money to the charity, or do I need to clarify that for my audience? So I do actually like the way that they've done that. I would like to know what happens to channels that you're subscribed to, that you manually resubscribe to. Like, how do you go about doing that if the button has gone? You have to go through the back end to like your subscriptions, because you might not want to lose your streak. But I'm sure that's probably even clarified in the FAQ down here. Obviously, that not all charities are there. I saw some people tweeting that their favorite charity wasn't there yet, but I'm sure Twitch is working hard with the charities, or there's even maybe a portal for the charities to directly get in contact with Twitch to make sure that they can set this up. And it's just nice for everything to be legit. You no longer have to trust the streamer that you're donating to, that they're actually going to pay the charity. You're no longer having to trust a third party. It's all done on platform through Twitch. And the ways of being able to track and show a live update as to the goal and whether it's been reached, I think it's all, I'm really, really impressed by it. Obviously, there's improvements to make, and that's why it's in early beta. But from what I've seen, I think this is going to be really popular, especially when we get to, you know, the St. Jude months, and people wanting to raise money. Like, we've seen some huge goals being reached on Twitch, haven't we, previously, back when Dr. Lupo streamed there. But also there's plenty of communities around the world that do massive events every year for raising money on Twitch. So I hope it's out for them to be able to test it, you know, with some really big numbers. Maybe we'll see the first $1 million raised on Twitch on the platform, and it's all going to go directly to the cause that they're supporting. So yeah, two thumbs up from me. I think another really, really great feature implementation from Twitch. I know not everybody does charity streams, but again, having the option there and not needing to understand how a different service provider works, I think is huge.
Yeah, especially because charity streams are really big for people who maybe aren't always on Twitch and are familiar with the ecosystem. Like, if you guys might have seen Post Malone's been streaming this week on Twitch, and it's all for charity that he's doing. But if you don't, like, if you want to come watch Post Malone and be part of it, but you don't understand Twitch, you may not really know how to donate and do all that stuff. But if it's just baked right in there as you're watching and you see the tracker of how much the chat has raised, you can see the notifications, people chatting and donating in the chat right there, then that actually just helps support the charity even more. So I'm really excited to see what that does for it. I know I'm personally going to be using this for our Lenovo channel, just putting everything towards charity, because it's just way easier to do than Tiltify or anything else like that.
Sweet. Let's go on to the next update, which I don't know if this was TwitchCon or if it was just after, because I didn't watch the whole TwitchCon stream, but it is the announcement of shared ban list or shared ban info. So this is something that, again, that I think people were talking about needing the option to be able to have some kind of master list of bad actors on Twitch if they weren't yet banned from the full platform, but banned from certain channels, being able to share that information. That is essentially what this is. So you can now share your list of banned users with other channels. I think up to up to 30 different channels you can share it with, or is it up to, that's right. Okay. There's some sort of GIFs that I'm showing on screen now, but for the podcast listeners, you can share the users that you've banned on Twitch with up to 30 different channels. So, you know, if you're part of a really small or marginalized community and you're seeing some bad actors that aren't being completely banned off Twitch as a platform, or maybe that's just not happening quick enough from Twitch's point of view, then you can share that ban list with other people that are facing the same problem. So again, I think this is a good update. Ben, I'd be keen to hear if you found any reasons to dislike this one, or is it all thumbs up here from us in the Gaming Careers podcast for Twitch this week?
No, this is great. A couple of things I want to add really quickly is this is especially good for communities of streamers, whether you're like a smaller community or a bigger one. You'll see a lot of viewers who will jump around within that community, and problem viewers who can do that sometimes. So if you can easily just, you know, cross blacklist somebody from those channels as being a problem, that could be super helpful. The other thing is that the functionality here is pretty interesting. They give you two options of how it works. One is, so it'll flag a user by default. If you share a channel, like say Pete and I share a channel and Pete flags a user or bans a user, then in my channel, that user could either be marked as like a suspicious user to watch out for when I see him in chat, or I can just have him outright banned the instant Pete bans him in his channel. So I think that's pretty cool. Like if you personally have a more relaxed stance and you want to give somebody a chance when they come into your channel and see if they do the same thing, or if you just want to be really harsh and say, if Pete doesn't trust them, I don't trust them, then they're gone. That's pretty cool. And it gives you options as a creator. So I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, there's a full FAQ at the bottom, which goes over many of the questions that people might have. Like, why is it limited to 30 channels right now? Seems like they're open to increasing that. So maybe it's just right now like a technical restriction. But also, why do we have to manually do this? Why aren't Twitch just banning bad actors altogether? And the response to that, which I think is fair, is this isn't necessarily for the people that need to be banned on Twitch, although you'd hope that they will go through the whole process and be banned. It's more for people that are maybe, you know, negative towards your kind of content or something like that, like not necessarily deserving of a platform ban, but still somebody that you don't want in your chat or you don't think should be in any of your friends' chats if they stream similar type of content. So it's well worth going through the blog post if you want to read more about this. Rollout wise, I didn't make any notes on that. Ben, have you seen this on your Twitch channel yet?
I think it may be live. I'll double check, but I believe this one actually may have already rolled out. So I'll take a look at that.
Okay, I'll go through some of the other new features that we've seen. This was a screenshot from the opening ceremony of TwitchCon. A tiny little feature, but similar to the one that we saw at the beginning, where you could pin certain users to your homepage. This is the ability to pin messages, which is hopefully rolling out at some point later this year, where you can pin messages, either your own or somebody else's, to the top of your chat, and it sort of, you can see here, has a little countdown timer for how long that's going to be pinned. Very similar to how it works currently on YouTube. This might be one of the few features Twitch is second to market with and taking from YouTube rather than vice versa. But in the screenshots here, you have both the ability to type it in with a command, so you can type /pin and then the message that you want to pin, or you can pin anybody's message. It doesn't have to be your own. Don't know what happens if you pin more than one, if it enters like a queue or if it just replaces the currently pinned one with the second one. We'll have to wait till the feature is actually testable to be able to know that. Ben, you came coming back to me with your answer. Have you got the shared ban list?
Yeah, I was looking through it. It does look like it's probably rolled out to everybody, so definitely check, and if you want to be able to access that, make sure you take advantage of that. Back to the pinned messages, though. This one is really interesting because this one, I believe YouTube already has, Pete, in the chat. And we've used it on the podcast quite a bit. But there were no actual dates, as far as I could find, on when that one was coming for all the updates. So I don't know when we'll see it. But it seems like a feature that's long overdue. Because you could... I think we talked about the announcements, too, that are a thing in the chat. But it doesn't pin it to the chat currently. So if you're in a busy chat, the announcement's gone in like half a second. So it doesn't really help, but this is perfect to replace that, I think, when that does come out.
Yeah, I can see this being used in a lot of different ways, honestly. The ability to pin certain messages, probably more useful to really busy chats than slower moving ones. But you know, even for the streams that we have here on YouTube, it's been useful every so often to pin a message that we want everybody to see, especially when people are jumping in at various different times and maybe didn't catch the very beginning of a podcast. Another screenshot, I believe, from TwitchCon, showing some new options for raid controls. So this has been something that I think Twitch are starting to do a really good job on, which is giving the streamer customized options to really choose how to moderate their chat or how to allow people to interact with their channel. So to describe it again for the listeners of the pod, there's new controls for raids where you can basically customize who can raid you. And it's much more detailed than just the number of viewers that are coming into your raid. So Ben, you want to describe what we're seeing here in the screenshots?
Yeah, so again, just giving you more controls. I've checked just really quickly, and currently your only controls are to allow raids, block raids, or only allow raids from followed channels and teammates. But in this new one, there's a lot more control in terms of you can get specific to a certain amount of viewers that you want to allow for a raid. If you decide that you must have at least a 30 viewer raid or something, then you can do that. You can also specify, the options are my teammates, so on your Twitch team if you have one, channels that I follow, channels on my auto host list, my subscribers, any affiliate channel, and any partnered channel. So again, I think this is probably put in place to help with some of the hate raids that we talked about a while ago, Pete, which are still ongoing in some cases. So it's nice to have more controls over that. I imagine that the viewer one in particular might be useful for really big channels where, you know, sometimes you get viewers who are doing one viewer or two viewer raids, just sort of spam up the notifications and things like that. So it could be nice if you don't have more control over that in that situation too. But yeah, I mean, I'll never complain about more controls for this kind of thing personally.
Yeah, there was already, if you use Streamlabs or Stream Elements, that you already had some control over the alerts for raids, that, you know, it would only be over a certain number. But because it also posts in Twitch chat, I believe, like having the control directly on Twitch now as to who can actually raid you with a view account is useful. It's also worth mentioning all those options that Ben just listed off, my teammates, channel I follow, channel on my auto host list. It seems that you can check and uncheck as many as you want. So you can sort of combine it to be completely customized to your own channel. So if you want channels that you follow to be able to raid you, and also any partner channel, then you can check those two boxes. It's not like you have to just select one of those. We're really running on with the podcast. We're going to hit a full hour here. Let's just quickly cover the last two updates that we saw. Zach has found an update for the new community intro feature. I did quickly check this before I went live. I didn't actually have it yet, so I don't know if this is rolling out or if you have it live, or maybe it was North America first. But this is a way to be able to, as a streamer, give a message alongside the introduce yourself message. So probably 6 months ago, a year ago, Twitch added the feature where when a new viewer arrives in your chat, they give a little prompt saying, you know, introduce yourself and we'll highlight your message to the streamer because, you know, you're a first-time viewer. Now, as a streamer, you can also add a little comment that is attached to that introduce yourself comment. So you can really directly encourage new viewers to chat with you because it's coming from you effectively. And then they sort of reply to that message and it gets highlighted for you. So it's completely customizable. You can write whatever you want. It has a 100 character limit, so it's not huge, but you can certainly encourage new viewers this way. And it doesn't look like it's coming from Twitch. It looks like it's coming from you, the streamer itself. Ben, any thoughts? And if not, then you can whack and introduce the final little update from Twitch this week.
Yeah, I will just say first, kind of interesting that they're doing this, but then B, I actually do have access to it. So oh. I guess maybe it is in the US or just rolling out to certain people. But yeah, it's in your moderation settings, actually, if you're on Twitch. So check it out and see if you have access. Kind of cool. Last thing we have is a couple of updates on TwitchCon, which I think this also just came out, Pete. But the first one is that the San Diego tickets for US will be on sale in early August, which is next week potentially. So keep an eye on for that. And then secondly, which is super interesting, is that the 2023 TwitchCon Europe is going to be in Paris, which is different for them. So really interesting. Pete, I know we couldn't make it to Amsterdam this year, but do you have any ambitions to make it to Paris?
Yeah, I mean, another very easy country to get to for the majority of Europe. You know, great flight connections, a smart decision by Twitch, honestly. I think if they keep touring these major EU capitals, London, Amsterdam, Paris. I think they're all good places to host a big event. And you know, for some people, they can't afford to necessarily fly to a different country. But if they're, you know, in France, it might be much easier for them to get to Paris. So I think it's nice to rotate it around and allow people to, you know, go to a TouchCon in their home country. Traditionally, France has been very good for hosting big events. Certainly for esports events, like, French crowds are always amazing. So hopefully it's the same for TwitchCon. Hopefully I'm back to visiting TwitchCon next year. Obviously, the pandemic over the past couple of years has made it tricky to fly to these kind of things, but it's always been great to go to and meet so many people. So, and we've got to meet in person. You know, we actually got a comment on the podcast a couple of days ago. I can't remember if it was through Twitter or if it was actually on one of the videos, basically saying that somebody, this person listens to the podcast every week because they're just hoping at some point that we do actually meet, because we talk about it so much that we've never met in person. It's just been an internet-based relationship. But
how long now? Like 2 years or something? That's crazy.
Yeah.
So long.
I know. We just started podding together after like the 3 TwitchCons in America that I went to in a row. So we timed it awfully. But if anybody that wants to go, the San Diego tickets for this year go on sale potentially next week. And the Paris TwitchCon next year. I didn't actually write down the month. You already have. You didn't know. I think it is mentioned at the end of this video.
Maybe. I just saw the
July 2023. So it will be It'll be July again, which is great. So don't know the weekend yet, so don't start booking hotels and things like that. But TwitchCon EU in Paris 2023. Wow, that was a lot of news. And we've filled the full hour. We've rounded up to the hour mark, which we don't normally get to do, or we end up rambling about one thing for too long and then run out of time to do everything. But that's what happens when we miss a week, and TwitchCon happens in that week. There's a lot of new features to talk about. So thanks everyone for watching, for joining in the chat. We've had a really active chat tonight. Sorry we didn't get to too many comments, but it looks like you guys have been interacting with each other, which is what we love to see. And for anyone listening on the podcast, as always, please do drop us a review if you can on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else. If you can give it a thumbs up or a star or a heart or whatever it is, a 5 thumbs rating, we really appreciate it. And I don't think we are around next week. I'm away, I'm afraid, but we'll work out when the next pod is. Sometimes it works out well to do sort of every other week so that we can have loads of news to talk about, but I do want to get back into the swing of a weekly podcast because it makes it nice for the live stream viewers to have that routine. And I'm really quite glad actually I didn't pod last week, because it's about 15 degrees colder today than it was last week, and I'm still covered in sweat, as you can see if you're watching the live stream. So Ben and I both struggling with the temperatures today, but appreciate everybody for joining live with the stream, and we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.
See you, everyone.